Hi, Hermes. I've got my buddy Marcus here with me, chin wagging away.
Oh, we are. And we've got the tea. We've got the tea. We're all
We
ready.
do. I have got a chaga chai here. Have you ever tried that? So
No. Is
it's
it coffee?
chaga mushrooms and chai spices. So Amy Vickers, shout out to Happy Patch Herbals, who is my clinic manager. She blends these amazing teas and she started making chaga chai and red bush chai and honey bush chai, and just I just like that spice of the chai. It just warms you up on the
Yeah,
inside.
no, I love chai, but I did that cleanse last time while we were speaking, and remember, I did 5 days. I was supposed to do 10, but my daughter, she had a sports day at school, and she's 8, and she said, "Please, Daddy, because you have this little picnic, can you please stop your fast so you can come on the picnic with all the mummies and daddies?" And I said, "Okay, then." And so I did 5 days, which was great. I feel amazing. But one thing I'm going to stick to is I'm going to stick to not drinking tea. I've stopped drinking tea, and I'm drinking rooibos tea, Earl Grey rooibos tea, by the way. That's still not caffeine in it.
No, I don't think
No.
so. Earl Grey's got caffeine. Have you ever tried honey bush though? So you know how rooibos is, or red bush is from South Africa? Well, honey bush is also from South Africa. It's the same plant family as rooibos, but it's a little bit sweeter still, and it's just like a bit of a deeper taste. It's so good. So good.
Want that down. What's it called? Honey.
Honey bush. And as a
Honey
kid,
bush.
honey bush, as a kid, my dad used to always buy the chopped up little stems and bark and leaves and things, and we'd always had a pot of honey bush brewing on the stove, so that smell just instantly takes me back.
Reminds me of childhood. Yeah. Well, tell what's a mock. They stopped drinking tea. For me, it's just been phenomenal. I mean,
Really?
I realized how much I was drinking. I was drinking a lot. And I'm mugs of tea a day. And I have 6 mugs a day before 12 o'clock, and in the evening and in the afternoon. So yeah, I've decided to stop. Well, stop until September, but I feel amazing stopping drinking. It's quite incredible. And then I looked up the pregnancy, and I was looking at the proving of it, and some of those symptoms I was having before, and I never really looked into it. So I'm going to really deep dive into the proving of tea. I'm going to go to Clarks Materia Medica because I've got the whole set and really go deep into it and find out all these little symptoms. Because I think teas, especially here in the UK, we drink so much tea. I don't know what it's like in Australia, but in the UK, we drink a lot of tea and coffee now.
No, big coffee drinkers over here. But you know what's funny with our chin wags, Marcus, is we committed to turning up and just talking about all things homeopathy. And both of us were like, what are we talking about today? I don't know. We'll just see how it goes. But you've just
Exactly.
given me an in into where we can start our conversation. Provings. Because
Okay.
I was part of Danica Appelein's proving that she's just done on the petrified sequoia,
Oh,
which
yes.
was really interesting. And it brought up a discussion about financial compensation for people who do provings. And Danica made a really good point that in any other profession, researchers get paid for their work. But for some reason, as is the homeopathic way, it seems, we like to make martyrs of ourselves and think that we have to bear the financial brunt of everything and struggle, and we're not allowed to thrive financially in what we do. We have to labor hard and not get paid for it. And so I love that Danica has started this conversation around financial compensation for provings. Have you come across this? Because we're just in the discussion at the moment of how do we go about this?
No, I haven't, but I think it's why not? This is why we've got to start, being sort of joining the rest of society in some way. And as you said, it's almost like we have to be this smart, and we don't. This is a profession, and if you're going to be giving your time, and with provings, as you have to go. Some people really experience a lot of symptoms during provings, and often for quite a long time. So, and it's time, effort, recording, all those things that you have to do to be an active participant in it. So, no, I'm fully supportive of that. I think we need to be more professional and start acting more professionally, which includes, being paid for what we do. I think it's really, really important. I remember, I mean, the drug, like I said, the pharmaceutical industry. I remember when I was a student, I was about 20, 21. I lived near this place where you could take part in drug trials, And they would pay you a lot of money.
Yeah, I've heard in the UK. I have a friend who was on his OE, like his overseas experience in the UK, and took part in those drug trials. He got paid a lot of money for that.
It was like £2,000 for a week, and you stayed badly, you and all the. And then, but when you went to go and sign up or just find out more about it, they'd give you all these sandwiches. I mean, I remember as a poor struggling student, it's like, oh my God, this is amazing. So, you got paid a lot of money for that. I heard rumors as well that if you had your toe amp, you could go and get your, I don't know how true this was, you could go and get your toe amputated and put back on again. So people to practice surgery for about, I don't know, £8,000. Well, I think that was.
But why? Well, when you're a struggling student, I can see that. But and back to the conversation of how we can get homeopathic provers. I've just found Danica's post here. I'm sure she won't mind me reading out some of this, but she has just said about how, you know, it's cost her around £3,000 to do this proving, and that involves driving to this place where this petrified sequoia was. There was a volcano millions of years ago that had petrified this particular, you know, trees. And in the process of trying to get this, she was almost seriously injured because she had to go down this steep hill and there was a fall, and, you know, she almost really injured herself. And then she also said about friends that she's had that have had really life-changing things happen when they've done provings. You know, like some of them have had felt the results for months and even like a year afterwards. For her personally, you know, she couldn't take any clients or anything else in that time because it was such an all-consuming process of doing this proving. She did it up to a C28. So, I mean, that's 28 hours of trituration, and which that's in itself awesome. Is a, you know, that's a week's work. And I've done 4 hours of trituration. Your arm gets sore and it's really, it's actually hard work. And, you know, she sent these remedies out to all of us all around the world at her own expense. We're starting the conversation of how to reimburse her. But I've said to her, because I now have these remedies and I've started getting people in New Zealand asking me for a copy of the remedy. And I said to her, well, I'm not actually going to post anything out until we get something concrete in place of how you are going to get compensated. I don't want anything for it because I like just the postage of posting it to another country. But I want her to either have like a donation button or something on her website where I'm not sending the remedy to anyone unless they have donated to her and then sending the remedy out. And I mean, I've never been a lead prover, but I can only imagine how much work is involved in this. And, you know,
it's a lot of work. I think that the homeopathic community should support it. And really, the homeopathic pharmacies should support it. If you look at the model of the pharmaceutical industry, they're the one that funds all the research. They're the ones that fund. So really, you know, the homeopathic pharmacies are going to benefit. Mm. So I think they need, you know, around the world, not just individual countries. So that would be my shout out. I think as a community, as a profession, we need to have a more structured way of doing it because it enhances our practice. It enhances homeopathy.
I'm always for, because I know in one of the interviews, Paul Terrio said that, you know, the homeopathic pharmacies need to triturate up higher. And so whenever it comes to more work on the pharmacies, I'm always a little bit hesitant because it's not like they have huge margins. You know, like Martin Pleasance, where I buy my remedies from, you know, we buy the remedies for so cheap. And I just think they've got their staff to pay and their expenses and all that. So it's not like huge margins. So it's not like they're...
I beg to differ.
Really? Okay.
You really, you know, you got to. It depends which pharmacy you're talking about. You're talking about people like Boiron, and you.
Yeah, well, that's.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. There's a lot of big pharmacies. I mean, they're the biggest in the world, and you're talking like a market capitalization of like €500 million, you know, euros.
Yeah.
So I'm not talking about very small independent pharmacies. I'm talking about some of these.
Okay.
You know. Okay, we have people like Nelson's Pharmacy, but you've got, you know, you've got other pharmacies that could very much step up. Mm. I think so. If you look at the market of homeopathy, particularly products, it's something like now a $17 billion industry.
Amazing.
And it's growing. It's expected to get to $57 billion by 2027. So don't tell me there's no money around.
Okay. You know, no, I hear you. Okay. So maybe I'll stick my scarcity mindset and back in my pocket where it belongs and just leave it there.
Because if that's about giving back, that's about, you know, that's research and development, R&D.
Yeah, definitely. So
part of what they can allow, you know, as part of their financial controls.
You and I have said this in the past as well, like homeopathy is really the ultimate in needing to have an abundance mindset, because the reality is that any of us can copy any remedy at a few cents, or if you've got a machine, you can just make it on a machine. Any homeopath can go to any other homeopath's website or business or whatever, look at their combinations, copy it. There's more people using picture remedies these days. I just had an email from another New Zealand homeopath. They just use a picture, put the water on it. You know, we've been doing that for ages. You've got radionics machines. You can just take one little pill of a remedy and put, 95% alcohol in it and turn that into a remedy. You can, you know, like this.
Yeah.
There's no money behind it. So
it's like recipes though, isn't it? It's like having recipes. So there's, you know, there's different recipes for different things.
Mm.
And I think that, I agree, you know, we need to get much more as a community in an abundance mindset, because I'm a great believer that the more you give, the more you get back.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think your intention is correct and is right, and you're coming from the right place, that we want to help and serve people, then it will come back to us tenfold.
Yeah,
I've never been in that scare. I used to be when I younger, because, you know, that's how I was brought up, you know.
Yeah,
I was one of seven kids, you know. There was the expression there's not enough to go around, or money just go and treat, and all those things. Really poverty consciousness mentality, and I had to shift it, and I shifted. I remember when I qualified, I had to shift it, because I couldn't still be in that space. So I think when we step into that place of abundance and believe there's more than enough out there, then it creates a whole different dynamic. If we're worried, it's a bit like when people refer homeopaths, they won't often refer to other therapies. So, if, you know, they need osteopathy, or they might need some counselling, they may need something else. Then often, sometimes homeopaths fear that, oh my God, they might not come back to me. And I'm going to lose a client. It should never be in that space. It should all be about what is the best for the person sat in front, what is the best for my client, for my patient. And patients really respect that. So we've got to get out and think of that scarcity mentality. I really do.
Absolutely. I went on a tangent there. Well, where I was trying to get to is that the remedies really cost nothing at the end of the day. So actually trying to get that money there to pay the people who are doing the provings, when something like that can so easily be copied on a machine or anything else. That's the part that I'm just like, oh, how do we get these funds?
Well, I think you just have to ask. That's my thing. It's like you set a precedent. It's like you're going to do a proving. It's going to be professionally done. It's going to be done. Da, da, da. And you say that, you know, the provers will be paid for this. And you just got to ask. So as I said before about the pharmacies, go to the pharmacies. Or start off with a debate within the community. Like I said, that question. Try, you know, go out to the community and ask them, you know, put it out there and say, what do people think? But I think it's always about asking. It's like, if you need anything, you've got to ask. But you have to have a plan.
Yeah, got to get that conversation going. Hey, I just feel like there's quite a few of us homeopaths that are ready for some real change and ready to do things in a different way, see things in a different way. It really feels, and it's probably just because, like, I know that I live in my own little bubble, but I know it's because of the podcast and being introduced to more homeopaths that think in a more broader sort of term. I didn't realize how many homeopaths are out there who are just thinking in this new paradigm, and it really gets me very excited about the future of homeopathy. It comes back to this whole scarcity mindset, which is just my pet peeve with homeopaths, because once again, this week in one of the groups, there was a post saying, you know, who is the richest homeopath? And the question was kind of asked tongue in cheek, with a double meaning of rich, meaning, you know, mental, emotionally and spiritually rich, or financially rich. So I think the original poster was kind of doing it as a play on words to see how people would take the question. But the amount of comments that was on there saying no real homeopaths make money. And somebody else said on there, I was lecturing once and a student asked me if they could make a living as a homeopath. And I said, choose a different profession. And I was so heartbroken that, can you imagine that? You're paying good money to go and study something and your lecturer say to you, you're never going to make money in this job. I am so lucky that one of my lecturers was, you know, same as you, Marcus, when you were young, this was your only career. It had to work. So she was a single mum and it had to work. There was no choice for her. So she was probably the most successful, financially successful homeopath in New Zealand. And she was one of my lecturers. So she made me believe that I could make a career out of this. If I had that other dude as my lecturer saying to me, go choose a different career, just imagine, I felt so hurt when I read that, because I'm like, that poor person, you have crushed their soul, you know? Yeah. You just need to show somebody that it can be done.
It's a ridiculous thing to say. I mean, it's
ridiculous.
That quote, you know, we don't see how things are, we see things as we are.
Yeah.
And this is what I used to hear from some people about how you can make a living at homeopathy. I thought, well, I have to. So I'm going to go and find the people that are. And that's what I did. I went and found the people that were doing it. And I asked them, I said, oh, can I meet with you? Can I have a cup of tea? They were very generous with your time. And you'll find us with people who are successful. If you're willing and you're showing sort of that spark of that you want to do this, then they will help you. And you know, it was the best thing I ever did. Because there's so many people out there, not just making a living, that got a very good career as a homeopathic practitioner, as a professional. So I always say, if you want to fly like an eagle, don't hang around with the turkeys, you know? So I'm not going to hang around with the turkeys, you know? I'm going to make sure that I'm flying with the eagles. I'm going to say this now. If you want to become a successful practitioner with a sustainable income, then find out the people that are doing it and see what they are doing. But the second point, which is really, really, really important, we just mentioned that, I found the people that had to, like I had to, I had no choice, or your single parent, who was your teacher. And many people that I know have been single parents and have done it because they had to do it. They had to, they didn't have a choice. So I always say to people, is this a hobby or is this a business? And that's how you approach it.
Gotta love the internet, Marcus, because I'm about to go in a direction and I just realized I need to ask permission first. And luckily Danitza is on Messenger. I just quickly send her a message as you're chatting, asking if it's okay if I share this information. She's just given me literally the second authority. So let me tell you
Breaking news.
You hear it right here. It's like on the edge of our seats, this can go any direction. That's the thing with Jim Meg. I was also going to say, you need to release Marcus's book of quotes because you have some kick-ass quotes. It's very inspirational. Or maybe a calendar, like, you know, like a daily quote of the day. So I want to share with you something super cool that just two nights ago, myself, Danitza, Nick Biggins, and Sally Moore, who's a homeopath here in New Zealand, did. Have you heard of family constellations?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Fantastic.
So Danitza is studying family constellations. She's done many, many of them. And she has said that it feels like this kind of mindset of the sauric mindset of not enough, always struggling.
It's very sauric.
It's actually come all the way from Hahnemann, where he had, right from the beginning, was chased from town to town. Like, he never was, like, until like right at the end of his life when he was in France with Melanie, he never really got accepted for what he was doing or celebrated for what he was doing. He always had to, you know, kind of fight, and was chased from town to town with his family and all his kids. So she did a family constellation. The four of us did a family constellation, healing some of, well, we, it was a blind one, so we didn't know who we were. One was recognition. One was, number two was money, and three was Hahnemann, but we didn't know who was who, and Danitza was leading this. And it was interesting because, you know, with family constellations, and especially done over Zoom with, you know, different continents, you stare at the person and you see if energetically you feel anything. I'd only ever done one family constellation before, and that was in like a personal development course I did. So I kind of knew what I was in for, but still not quite really. And I kind of sat there and stared at them. And the first time I did this, I felt something towards the one person, and it was very strange. So this time I felt nothing. And I thought that was really interesting. And we didn't even know what the three things were. So we didn't know what was being represented. We just know we were assigned a number and we had to stare at each other and see what comes up out of the collective consciousness. So I stared at Sally and Nick, and I just felt like, I said to them, the word is neutral and it can go either way. It's just neutral. And Nick and Sally had a little thing going there. And it was so interesting, which was then revealed that Nick was Hahnemann, Sally was recognition, and I was money. So I was completely neutral. Like, this feeling of neutral. There's no nothing attached. It's a neutral thing. It can be, depends if you use it for good or evil. And so what the Nitsa then did is healed, like there was this thing with recognition with Hahnemann and his dad. And that was, she did her magic however she did. And then I came in as Samuel's mum. And there was some things happening there. And then we found that it actually goes back further than that. So we went to the grandmother, healed that, which then healed through, and she did all these amazing things. So, you know, it's felt really amazing. And I actually said to her, I wonder if we did a few more of these types of constellations, healing all the way back Samuel Hahnemann's wounds, because he was only a man at the end of the day. And if that energy can then just, I don't know, come through some way. I am this complete newbie in all of this, so I am not the correct person to be having this conversation, really. I'm just putting it out there for people who are experts in that field, is that maybe this is something that we can do to help heal the sauric mindset that seems to be so ingrained in homeopaths, because we need to get over the shit. It's time to thrive.
Yeah, absolutely. No, totally. And I, that's a really interesting point, because I mean, the family constellation, I've seen more people shift issues within their family than anything else than family constellations. It's an incredible thing. But I think that's a really interesting point. And I've never really thought about that before, about where Hahnemann was. Obviously, we know the story that he was chased from town to town and chased out of town, not actually physically chased out of town in different places where he tried to be. And so that's a really interesting point, because that's the energy really that was the birth of homeopathy, wasn't it? Of that energy and conflict, you know, conflict and ridicule. But I think with any great truth, I mean, they say truth goes through three phases. First, it's ridiculed.
Yeah.
Second, violently opposed. And then thirdly, it's finally accepted. And I think that's the arc as well of homeopathy. And I think we're in that place now of finally accepted. This is what we're coming into. I think we're into that phase. But we need homeopaths to stand in their power, do what they do best, which is prescribe on the law of similars. That's all we're asking, is that, you know, those remedies. Robin Murphy would often say you could run a homeopathic practice from a remedy kit. You know, you could run a practice from that. Just that knowledge. I mean, he would say, you know, if he was dying of a terrible disease, you'd rather trust a first year homeopath's wildest guess than any doctor on Harley Street. Harley Street in London is the most prestigious place for doctors. So I think that, you know, we've just got to realize, we've just got to get into our power and abundance. That's the thing. Is like you said about the money. Then again, a really interesting point. It is neutral. But it depends how it's used. So it's never that. It's always the way that we see things.
I know. I started going ranty on that post in the Facebook group where they were saying, you know, about the rich homeopath. And then I deleted most of it. And I just wrote something there that having a successful practice means that I can buy the books that I want. I can buy. It means that when CHE, you know, when Hilary Dorian's Master Practitioner course came up, that, you know, that was a few thousand bucks. But it meant that I had the money to do that once in a lifetime opportunity to learn from the one and only Hilary Dorian. Now, if I was sitting there, this woe is me, oh, my little clinic, I don't make any money, I couldn't afford to do that course. But because I have a successful clinic, I can. And I can buy the homeopathic books that I want so that I can be a better practitioner. So I think we need to stop like wearing this as a badge of honor that we're struggling, and need to stop these stupid sayings like a real homeopath doesn't make money. What BS is that? You know, So are we supposed to say like a real doctor is not rich either, or a real specialist doesn't have money? But how, you know, that's ridiculous. So why can we say like a real homeopath? And we need to stop saying these things to each other. We need to just like not even have that as consciousness.
Yeah, I agree. I think, look, we can always, but this is back to what I was saying before. Is it a hobby or is it a business? And like I said, there's lots of people that are successful in practice. What I mean by successful in practice, as this conversation we're talking now, I'm talking about having sustainable income that you can live and you can thrive and all those things. Mm-hmm. So, but it goes back to this, and I talk about this a lot, I've done this in webinars. It talks about what I call the three keys. You have to embody what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You have to embody it. So when you embody what you do, you have impact. And that can be in a conversation, that can be whatever. And when you have impact, you have livelihood. And those are the three keys. People focus on livelihood. I've not got enough clients, got enough patients.
Yeah.
But if you haven't got the embodied piece on the bottom, then people may come, but they won't stay because you don't embody it. And what do I mean by embodied? That you're really, this is what you are.
Mm.
It's like me. I do many, many things, but I'll always be a homeopath.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously I've practiced, not as much as I used to, I'm still practicing,
mm.
but I'm running I have the school, I'm doing all different projects. So, but I'm still a homeopath, and every single cell in my body is a homeopath. So I know you can drop me in the middle of Timbuktu and I'll have a practice up and running within 4 weeks.
Mm.
And I think that's really important. It's why we get into that. I mean, there's many reasons, but I think there's something about, like I said, that soaring thing, that they can't embody it. It's like they can't seem to, I don't know what it is. It's like they want external validation. They want, I don't know what it is, it's a poverty consciousness. I mean, that's the nervous, I think, I wouldn't put words to it.
It's fine. I just think it's this thing with people thinking money is dirty. And, I will put my hand up like this, me talking this way, you would not have heard me talking this way 5 years ago, even 2 years ago, possibly not even a year ago. Like, this is all very new for me, embracing abundance. Because that's, we were five kids, so not quite as many as you. And my mum was a school teacher, and my stepdad was a dropkick. Luckily, he doesn't listen to the show, so I can say that. So the there was...
What was a dropkick?
Not a nice person.
Oh,
yeah.
We played football, and it was like
No. And my dad was stingy. So we just, we were like really poor growing up. I remember that I got selected for a jewelry thing external to school, but I couldn't go because I couldn't afford it. And then I wanted to do violin, but we couldn't afford a violin. Like, there was just never money for anything. We never went on, holidays we went to was on a family's farm, that sort of thing. And there was just, and we're having five kids as well. There was never money for anything. And so that's just how I was raised. And then actually getting your mindset out of that, if that's your reality, it's very, very hard. And I think we talked about this last time, and maybe we're rehashing it a bit, but maybe people need to hear this rehash and have it drilled into their brains that it wasn't until I started working on myself that my practice started growing. And I think you said the same as well, as your practice can only grow as much as you put time into growing yourself. Your business will never outgrow who you are, mental, emotionally.
It's all about, like I said before, we don't see how things are, we see things as we are. It comes down to us. Your practice is an external manifestation of your internal state.
Mm.
If we do not work on ourselves, then we will stay at the level that we're at. We can't go any further. It's like with our patients. Clients, I was saying, you can take your patients as far as you're at. You can take them any further. That's why we've got to be constantly be in a state of self-reflection, of personal development, of who we are. And that's what I mean by the embodiment piece. Yeah. It's like that's part of that. And you will then, people will come to you.
Mm.
I've had it when I've gone to I think I might mention on that other podcast when we did in the interview where, you'll be in a shop paying for something and my card, it says homeopathic healthcare. And I've had people say, oh, you're homeopath. Yeah, yeah. See, I'm not thinking, oh, they're going to attack me, thinking, oh, homeopathy's rubbish.
Yeah.
I don't think that at all. That's not even, I'm neutral. Oh, you're homeopath. Yeah. Oh, I've got this really, I've got this really bad sciatica for the past past year or so. Do you think homeopathy could help? Yeah, it can help. Yeah. Or do you have a card? It's like wherever you go, or you're in a taxi, you're on a train, or wherever you are, people will naturally come to you.
Or you can just get yourself a shirt that says, yes, I have a remedy for that, and walk around.
Exactly, a walking advertisement board. But seriously, back to that point, is that what you said, I think, and it does need repeating. It's like we've got to be constantly looking at ourselves. and working with others, you know, doing courses, working with a coach or a practitioner, or, you know, always trying to enhance, I think, things and be healthy. You know, be healthy. We've got to, you know, be the change you want to see, as Gandhi said. It's like we've got to be walking and talking, being healthy and vital, which is crucial.
Definitely. I feel like we can talk a bit, like that topic, we could never, like having a successful practice. I think both of us are so passionate about that, that could be a whole podcast in itself. But you know what, I'll just kind of pin it there, that financial compensation for provings. I'm just putting it out there. So if you are a listener that has a good idea, hop into the Facebook group. It's facebook.com/groups/hellohomies. Or just type in homeopathy hangout podcast and the Facebook group will come up. And just if you have any idea of how we can get some financial compensation for our provers, you know, that would be really, really good, because I think this is a conversation we need to start having. Something I actually had this set aside for the first Chin Wag that we had, but we've had so many other cool stuff to talk about, it kind of got put to the side. And that was homeopaths who prescribe placebos. Is that something you've ever done? And what are your thoughts?
No, I haven't. And listen, if you want to do that, that's up to you. But for me, and listen, I think you can practice homeopathy however you want to do, but it's the reasons why are you doing it? Is it you feel that, you know, you need the patient to go away with something or have something? To me, if you've been treated homeopathically, and as a homeopath, my job is to help educate as well. And sometimes people don't need to take remedies. You may think, well, it's what people like to take because that's what they do with allopathic medicine. But homeopathy is not allopathic medicine. Mm. You know, we're trying to educate and teach that actually sometimes, you know, these remedies are keys to a lock. They're just stimulating your body to heal itself. That's what we're doing. The stimuluses. I don't know why. And I also, on that placebo, maybe we're going off tangent a bit, but also when homeopaths don't tell you what remedy you're taking.
That was my next question.
I am not into that at all, because I think people should know what they're taking. You wouldn't go to the doctor and they give this medication. Well, I'm not going to tell you what it is. We'll just take it anyway. Yes, percentage of the population would go, that's fine. I don't need to know. You're the doctor. However, it's not ethical. I think you should know what you're taking. And I tell you why, because I've had many times when I've had patients who they may be in an acute situation and they phone me because they can't get out of the homeopath for whatever reason. They've gone on holiday for 4 weeks. And I'll say, what remedy do you want? You know, so, I don't know. My homeopath didn't tell me what it was. Mm. I mean, you know, I've had that with the homeopathic helpline in the UK. They've said that. It's one of the biggest bugbears, is when people are phoning the homeopathic helpline and the homeopath hasn't told them what remedy they're on, having some kind of aggravation. So I believe in transparency. I believe you should tell people what they're taking, because then they learn about the remedies and they learn about homeopathy. It is different than allopathic medicine. We don't need to take something every single day. We can if that's being prescribed, but it's not a routine like doing a course of antibiotics where you're going to take it every day. So I just think it's, in a way, it's sort of, I don't know, I feel it's sort of lying to the patient, to the client. So that's my take on it. However, if that's what you do, that's what you do.
Well, I did a survey in my Facebook group asking my members, would they, and I just said, look, you know, some homeopaths don't tell what remedies they're giving, some do. Which would you prefer? And I did a poll and I gave them the option of, you know, saying, you know, I would prefer to know or I prefer not to know. And of that, 195 of them said they want to know, and 8 of them said they don't care.
Yeah. One, so there you go.
There was actually a third one, because then one said they didn't want to know, but that was actually one of my staff members that said that. So I was like, that probably doesn't count because she completely trusts me. But 195 said they want to know, 8 said they don't care, and 1 said they didn't want to know. So it's very interesting. I think that's such a murky one. I am completely on board with you that I don't care how another homeopath prescribes, as long as it's all above board, as long as they lay their shop front out beforehand, like we've spoken about before, and as long as they explain to you their client. I'm more interested in the reason why they feel that is necessary. With placebo, we got taught that at college that that is something that you can do for your client, and that the reason why you might do it is if you have a highly anxious client and you've only prescribed, say, arsenicum 200C, and you only want to give them one dose, but they are highly anxious and they want to take a dose daily, then you give the arsenicum 200C and the rest of the week you tell them to take the placebo. So I am with you that it's all about education. And I think the reason when there has been disputes with homeopaths or things have been in the news or yucky stuff has happened, it's because that client was not properly enrolled or properly, what's the word they always use?
On board.
They weren't properly onboarded. And that's why in my terms and conditions, before you're allowed to have a consult with me, you have to watch my 30-minute homeopathy at home video. There's no exceptions. I don't care if you've used homeopathy before or if you've seen another homeopath, you have to watch it because I don't know what that person has told you. So that way I know we're on the same page when you come for a consult with me. You know what a remedy is, you know how it's used, you know the philosophy behind it. We want to use that full hour, hour and a half to take the case. We don't have that time to tell the client exactly what homeopathy is if they're new to it. And that's why I did my 30-minute free homeopathy at home video. It's on YouTube. Anybody can watch it. And I think we all need to really work on educating our clients and explaining what we're doing, because that's like a little bit of lazy prescribing, I think, if you're just doing placebo. But I mean, I'm sure there are genuine reasons. Like, if you've properly educated your client, I can't think of a reason of why you would need to use placebo.
Well, back to that, what you were told at college, I still think you could still give the arsenicum as you're given it. And you could give something else to help them out, like rescue remedy if they need to take it.
Eliphas tissue salts.
Exactly, which is a completely different level, and it's not going to affect the arsenicum. So, I just think it's more about the practitioner. I think they feel obliged to because of the patient demand. But we're trying to help educate people to think about health in a different way. So, yes, you still use supportive things like we just mentioned, tissue salts or flower essences. But to me, again, we're walking alongside our patient.
Mm.
We're not just telling them what to do. You take this and go away. It's like we need to be walking alongside them. And like you said, your video is an education. But it's back to what we said in the last one, where it's about setting your stall out at the very beginning. This is what I do. That can be written, that can be video, that can be audio, it can be all different ways, but it has to be there.
Definitely. And not telling your client what you're giving them, I mean, that is getting into that the same sort of relationship that many people have with their doctor. Like, you take this, don't question me. And you know how much trouble, like the reason the medical system is the way that it is because of this very unnatural, wrong relationship that we as patients often have with our medical practitioners, where we put them on pedestals and we see them as gods and we don't question what they're doing. And, you know, this, I think as homeopaths, we're kind of heading in that direction. If we are not telling our clients, then we're not empowering them. We're taking their power away by not telling them what remedy it is that we're giving them.
Exactly.
And it's almost that, like that God complex, which I just like cringe at.
It's a power thing, isn't it? It's a power dynamic. You've got the power. I'm going to give you something, but I'm not going to tell you what it is. You know, it's like, you know, if the patient said, look, I don't want to know.
Yeah, that's a completely different story.
I'm going to write it down. I'm going to write it in a little note and give it to you, fold it, put it in, you know, and if you want to look at it, there it is, for example. So, but I'm just
laughing because I can just imagine you write it. It's a boy. Say, open it. Sorry, that was my twisted mind.
That was a really serious point. I mean, you just made, no, I'm joking. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes, all right. Like you said, it's I just think we're going to get rid of those power dynamics. That's an old way of practicing medicine. I think it's got to be collaborative. It's got to be, you know, we're helping together to restore the health of that person. We're working together. And so I think that's, to me, part of that.
Can you ever really truly heal if you are not an active participant in the healing process?
How can you?
You can't. So
I really don't think you can. I mean, true healing on a deep level, particularly, that you can't. You've got to be always process it. You know, in the we talked about this before as well, but in the consultation, what goes on and the realizations that happen, the shifts that can happen just in talking. Even when we're speaking, you know, like we're talking now, as we're talking, we're getting insights, aren't we? We're getting different shifts of perspective and curveballs coming in, but that's great, because that's part of that's part of life, isn't it? It's part of life and of a vital life, because we all want to have a vital life, living to being the best versions of who we can be. So, yeah, I concur.
Yes. Wonderful. And then a little bit of fun here at the end is for our listeners. Marcus and I were having a chat before we started about, it must have been, I don't know, was it the 90s when there was this bunch of well-known celebrities? Well, I guess that's, you know, well-known celebrity, that's kind of like well-known people. Who were advertised or who promoted the fact, I don't know who it was that arranged this thing, but there was some celebrities that agreed to have certain homeopathic plants that are made into homeopathic remedies, like pulsatilla.
It was
for homeopathy. Okay. And was it in the 90s or early 2000s?
It was in, confusing my decades now, but it was in the I'm sure it was after 2010.
Oh, so, what? Really?
Yeah. Okay. It wasn't before that.
Oh, it felt like, okay.
The people they were talking about were quite popular, and well, probably in the 80s and the 90s.
That's what I'm thinking. Because they had they had like little, like an Arnica Daisy body painted on their arm. And then, it was beautiful. And so we were just talking about the fact that we need some young influencers or celebrities or whatever they want to call themselves these days, speaking up about the fact that they use homeopathy. And actually how the conversation came on is that there is a homeopath with 20-odd years experience called Matt Pepper, who wrote a book called Happiness is an Inside Job. And he is friends with Coldplay, and Coldplay endorsed his book, which made me wonder whether Coldplay uses homeopathy. I'm sure the conversation's come up, and made me wonder if, you know, they would ever come out and publicly and say that they use homeopathy and, you know, they're fans. So, yeah.
We need, the way that social media is now, whatever you think of social media, be it Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever you think of it, one tweet from somebody who's got 50 million followers saying, you know, I think the example, like say Kim Kardashian, I don't know anything about her at all, but I know she's got a big Instagram account. If you all tweet, you know, Twitter, if they just tweeted or just put an Instagram post saying, hey, I've just been to the gym today, I think I pulled a muscle, I took some Monica, it was amazing. The impact of that tweet or that post would have on homeopathy, you would be able to measure it in sales of homeopathy. People on Google looking for it, it would have a massive impact. And that's the sort of world we're in now, where those little things, like I said, those influencers, those, whatever you think of them, they have huge audiences. We talk about something like 50 million people. Yeah. That is like off the scale. It's nearly the population of the UK who are following you. That would be great. So anybody out there, big shout out if you know anybody.
That'd be good. Well, you know somebody. You told we won't share it on won't share it on here, but you've treated it.
I won't share it on here. I've treated quite a few celebrities in my time. And it's just getting people to be proactive around it.
So, and Usain Bolt, I know he's spoken out about having a German homeopath that's helped him. But we just need some young influencers, you know, I'm saying young because the ideal time when we want somebody to come on board with homeopathy is before conception. So we want these young, early 20s, you know, even younger if we can, but early 20s, we want them to come and see a homeopath to get their bodies ready before conception. And early 20s, young influencers, just putting it out there for our listeners. You just never know who's listening, right? Like somebody might listen and have some ideas.
Exactly. We just need a tweet. We just need little mentions and that just raises the profile of homeopathy to a whole different audience of people and generation. I think that's what we're talking about. It's a different generation, because if homeopathy is going to continue on, then we need the future generations embracing it. And for me, it fits really nicely with the whole sort of sustainability drive that everybody's on, because homeopathy is the ultimate. in sustainability because it's a very clean medicine. We don't need much to produce the remedies, as we said at the beginning of the of this podcast. And so it's the ultimate, you know, free of side effects. And it works with the body, not against the body. So to me, it should be embraced by the next generations coming through because it fits in with that paradigm shift that we're going through.
It really should be. Marcus, any final words from you?
No, not really. It's been a great conversation and a lot to reflect about. Not really. Just that plea to anybody, you know, just if you're struggling in that poverty consciousness, I've been there. I know what it's like. Same, Eugene,
I've been there.
But I'm just going to tell you now, the place of abundance is a lot better place to be sitting in it. And yeah, just really trying to connect with that. And there's amazing, actually, Australian bush essence called Abundance. Maybe White does. So I would say definitely take that if you're struggling with it, because it'll help you shift any of those blocks. And check out Family Constellations, because that is amazing.
And then I'll throw a little book here at the end. It's called Mastering Your Mean Girl, but it applies to boys too. Melissa Ambrosini is the author. She's an Australian woman. And that's something that really helped me, just listening to that mean girl voice that tells me I don't deserve this, I don't, you know, deserve that, or, you know, like that book was really good to kind of help me change my, make a mind shift. So, yeah, I just listened to the audiobook in the car. I think it was about 8 hours or so. And my 8-year-old daughter listened with me as well. And there were some powerful messages in there. And I'm just, if I can do anything, I just hope I can pass on to her to have like really good self-worth, because it's definitely something I struggle with my whole life. Even now, you know, it's just the mean girl. I just know now to put her in her room and just close the door gently. But it's always a work in progress. Hey, none of us are perfect.
And that's the root often with poverty consciousness. It's often a lot about self-worth, isn't it? It's about, it can be a variety of things, but self-worth often is at the core of it.
Absolutely.
Definitely. So if you want to fly like it, remember, stop hanging around with the turkeys. people that are going to support you in your dream, in your vision, as a practitioner, to go out there and do what makes your heart sing.
Love it. I was just thinking, I think that book title needs to change slightly. I think it needs to be Marcus and Robin's Book of Quotes. So
got
a few quotes in there from Robin Murphy as well. I think that. And then the other, I know I keep piling work onto you, but the other thing is you need to make that song happen. I know you said you're looking for a drummer. And then I was thinking, well, maybe if we can get Matt on the podcast and he can hook us up with Coldplay, maybe they can help us.
Sounds good.
Get the song going.
Yeah, rock and roll.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time, Marcus. It's always fun to chinwag with you.
Yeah, it's great. It's good chinwag. Take care.
See ya.